Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, hosted by me, Dr. John Wales. This is the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Today's guest has over 20 years of consulting, coaching, and speaking experience, and is an internationally renowned thought leader who is on a mission to protect leaders from dangerous judgment errors, known as cognitive biases, by developing the most effective decision strategies. He is here today to help our agencies by enhancing our abilities to make effective business decisions and to avoid the pitfalls of poor decision-making by never going with our gut. I would like to welcome to the huddle best-selling author, orator, business consultant, and CEO of Disaster Avoidance Experts, Dr. Gleb Sipirsky.
Thank you very much, John. I really appreciate that kind introduction and look forward to our conversation.
I know that a lot of your skills aren't necessarily purely insurance related, but I think one of our weaknesses in the industry is, as agents, we are taught how to sell the insurance products. We sometimes educate ourselves on the insurance products, but we're mostly weak on our business skills, and decision-making is an important part of business skills. I would like to start our discussion here by asking a little bit more about your background experience and what led you to creating this approach in decision-making.
Sure. Happy to share, John. And you're absolutely right that that's what insurance agents are optimized at, selling insurance. That's their skills. But when I work and I consulted for organizations, national associations like RIMS, the Risk and Insurance Management Society, YASA, the Information Accounting Systems, so Insurance and Accounting Systems, so Information Systems Society, so a number of national organizations for insurance professionals, as well as individual companies like Aflac, like Nationwide, regional ones like, so national ones, regional ones like Grange Insurance, and so on. So I'm quite familiar with the insurance industry and know it quite well. And they are one of my biggest clients, the insurance industry as such. Now, I know what insurance agents are like, and I know where insurance agents are weak. And decision-making is an area where insurance agents feel themselves to be strong because, you know, they're selling insurance. They should know what they're talking about, right? Making good decisions, insuring themselves from problems. But that's not how insurance agents actually are. When you look at their business decision-making skills, how they are able to address those dangerous judgment errors that cause us to make business disasters, to lead us into business disasters, that is a big, big problem. My background is in decision-making. So I've been fascinated by this topic ever since I was a kid. I grew up in the late 1990s when, you know, remember the .com, when the companies like Webvan and Pets.com were partying like it's 1999, for those who remember that Prince song. So maybe that ages me. And then I was 18 at that time in 1999. And then I was 21 when the .com boom collapsed in 2001, 2002. And so that coming of age, seeing those decision-making strategies, the people who were praised in the Wall Street Journal in 1999 and those who were criticized in 2001, 2002, they were making the same decisions. They had the same approaches to decision-making, but they obviously got praise at one stage and criticism at another stage. And that really showed me that even the top leaders in businesses are not very good at making decisions. I'm not even talking about insurance agents, top business leaders. Why is that? Well, because they're taught to go with their gut, to follow their heart, to trust their intuition. And that's a very, very dangerous tendency. Now, if people were making good decisions when they went with their guts, we wouldn't need insurance. Let's be honest about that. You know, if that's what insurance is there, because people don't make good decisions when they go with their gut. But insurance agents go with their gut all the time. That's what they're taught to do. That's how they function. And that's why my book is called Never Go With Your Gut: How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters. So I decided to study this topic, decision making. And I learned that our gut intuitions, our reactions, when I got a PhD in this at UNC Chapel Hill, and that taught as a professor for 7 years at Ohio State. So I have a rich academic background. I've been consulting on this topic for over 20 years. So I have a very extensive consulting background. And what I learned in that academic program, the PhD, is that our gut reactions, our intuitions, are actually not wired for the modern environment. They're wired for the savanna environment, the ancestral savanna, when we lived in small tribes of 50 people to 150 people, when we had to get away from those saber-toothed tigers. You might have heard of our fight or flight response. That's also known as a saber-toothed tiger response, when it was better to jump at 100 shadows than to miss the one saber-toothed tiger. We're the descendants of those who have a very strong fight or flight response, who have a very strong tribalism impulse. And all of those cause us to make really bad decisions. Tribalism causes us to trust the wrong people and distrust the wrong people in the modern setting. That's very bad for business. Fight or flight response causes us to jump to conclusions and make very quick decisions. And that's very bad for business too. And these impulses, they feel right. They feel comfortable. And that is where we run into trouble. The specific ways that our minds are miswired, those are called cognitive biases. And that's my area of expertise, the cognitive biases. That's the courses that I developed for RIMS, for YASA, for other national associations of insurance agents on cognitive biases, how to defeat these dangerous judgment errors that stem from how our brain is wired and our evolutionary environment.
Can you give us an example of a cognitive bias?
Sure, happy to. So I was doing a consulting project for an insurance agency, and I was looking at how they were approaching risk in the post-COVID environment, what that's looking like. And of course, we're not out of the COVID environment yet, but we are with the vaccines. Hopefully we'll get out of there soon. So think about this as the post-vaccine environment and in the post-COVID recovery. I was looking at all aspects and helping them do a strategic pivot of their insurance. And so while I was doing this, I saw that the chief underwriting officer made a decision to approve an insurance policy for a sizable chain of buffet restaurants. And the insurance policy approval, well, what happened there? It was approved at the same rate that it would have been before the pandemic. Now, if you think about this, that is not a really good approach, because people are really not likely to go to buffet restaurants nearly as much in the post-pandemic environment. First of all, the ones that they were approved in, generally speaking, buffet restaurants don't have a patio, and many people are not going out to eat without a patio. Second, even if they are going out to eat, they're not really going out to eat to buffet restaurants, because those are, you're bumping into each other, you can't do social distancing, and of course you have the potential to get sick with the food. It's not, people are really worried about cleanliness. So it's not a really good bet for the future. And when I was examining this, I saw what the chief underwriting officer had in mind and what he felt was a status quo bias. Now, the status quo bias is one of these dangerous judgment errors, these cognitive biases that cause us to want to revert to the status quo ante, to a status quo, hold on to or go back to what we perceive as the right way of functioning, as the right way of being. So status quo. And he perceived the right way of functioning as January 2020. He thought that, well, with vaccines widely available, we'll just turn back the clock to January 2020. And we can write insurance policies and give them out on the same basis as before. And that's not a really good idea. We are not ever going back to January 2020, no matter how many insurance agents would love to do that, because that's what they're comfortable with, and brokers and so on, agencies. That's not where we're going to. Society's values, habits, norms, including the risk assessments, which is the fundamental basis of insurance, have been fundamentally changed since that time. But people are not in insurance, are very much not realizing this, and they're not adjusting insurance policies to address these issues. So he was really not adjusting his insurance policies to address these issues. He didn't realize what was going on, that he was falling into the status quo bias. And so that was a major issue, and I can go in depth into how I had to deal with it in the strategic pivot, but that was an example of the status quo bias that is a very, very serious issue and a big problem. So that's one type of issue. Now, another type of issue that's a big, big issue for insurance agencies right now is the question of the transition to the future of work. So hybrid work, remote work, right? There are companies, let's say Nationwide, which have decided to be incredibly flexible. And I gave some feedback to Nationwide about this, to be incredible consulting, incredibly flexible. They have some of their departments are working up to 75% of the people in their departments. Some departments are working full-time remotely. So to give you an idea of how flexible they are. By contrast, AIG is basically said that we'll be an office-centric company. We'll get all our agents back to the office. And of course, Nationwide and AIG are somewhat competing companies, right? Now, what you're seeing with this dynamic is that AIG is losing very talented agents, very talented insurance agents, because people really do not want to be forced to go back to the office when insurance agents discovered they can do the vast majority of their work very comfortably from home. So that is a big, big issue that's going on here. And the issue around that is called the anchoring bias, where people are anchored to how they're used. It's another status quo bias issue and an anchoring bias issue. So anchoring bias has to do how we are first anchored to the initial impressions of the information and collaboration that we have. And so the leaders at AIG are very much anchored to their initial impression, to the sense of how they should collaborate. And so they are not willing to be flexible, and they're making bad decisions for retention and recruitment going forward. So that's kind of another issue. And a third issue that I've seen really harming insurance agents right now in the post-vaccine COVID environment is the effectiveness of their selling. So many insurance agents have not yet learned how to do effective selling in a virtual environment. They want to meet people as much as possible face-to-face. It's very intuitive. It's very comfortable. They know how to sell face-to-face. They don't know how to sell well virtually. And that is a problem because many of their clients are not willing to meet face-to-face. And even after the COVID becomes endemic as opposed to pandemic, they will have discovered that they can buy their insurance fine from virtual insurance brokers in virtually. So that is a really major issue. And that is called functional fixedness. So functional fixedness, it's kind of like the hammer nail syndrome. When you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And when you're used to selling face-to-face, then you're trying to do everything face-to-face. That's very comfortable. And insurance agents are just not learning the new skills that are required to sell effectively virtually. They're really trying to go back and try to sell face-to-face, and they're being fixed in that functionality. They're not learning new approaches and techniques, and they're going to be left behind by the new crop of insurance agents who are going to learn these skills. So those are three big issues that I would highlight as cognitive biases that are really a problem for insurance agents right now.
One of the things that we see is that people still want to buy from people. They still want that connection. Mm-hmm. But how that connection is being made has been dramatically altered. We used to prefer sitting across from a desk from somebody. Now we can do the same thing in a Zoom call, in a Google Meet, or in a Microsoft Teams meeting, and get the same thing accomplished without the travel. And you're right. Many of the agents that I've talked to that have been successful in the modern era are technically prepared for that. They have the equipment. They have the webcam. A lot of them even have the selfie lights and where they can change their appearance. They've changed the background of their office, which I should probably do. But they've changed the presentation from working across the desk philosophy to being sellable online. They've learned to ask the questions. They've learned how to read people. They've learned how to look at their line of sight on what the people are looking for. And they have used that and created almost like a content creator studio. Mm-hmm. And those agents are the ones that are tearing the industry apart. The agents that are adaptable, the ones that are not completely anchored. And there's a saying in the industry, well, that's the way my grandfather did it. Well, your grandfather wouldn't be doing the same things now in the pandemic, I can guarantee you. Somewhere along the way, somebody had to be adaptable or that business would not exist. Sometimes I think we lose sight of that flexibility.
You're absolutely right, John. And that is exactly what I'm talking about. So the crucial thing, you're talking about the techniques, and the techniques are really important, but the crucial thing is the mindset. The functional fixedness is what's happening in the mindset. So the functional fixedness cognitive bias is people's minds are fixed, and they are not, there are so many insurance agents who I've seen who are just biding their time and saying, you know, this thing will blow over, everything will go back to quote unquote normal. Nothing will go back to normal. We're never going back to January 2020. That is never going to be the case. You'll still have some proportion of people who buy face-to-face, but they're going to be older and older. Younger people are going to prefer to buy in person, and there are plenty of older people who prefer to buy virtually because they don't have to meet with the agent. Now, this is not something that insurance agents like to hear, but customers of insurance agents, one of the reasons they like to do the virtual call is they feel less pressured. And of course, insurance agents can use less of their sales techniques. So you're going to find that more savvy customers are going to be doing more and more virtual calls, even when it's completely safe. And so I can guarantee to you that if you don't learn the skills of remote selling, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And that is the on an individual level. And I said before on hybrid and remote teams, if you are a leader, if you are managing a team and you're trying to make all of your insurance agents go back to the office, and you're also trying to make them meet the clients one-on-one in person, that is going to be trouble for you because you're going to be adapting for the modern world. The future of work is going to be a hybrid and remote future, whether that's the way you collaborate internally or whether that's the way you engage with external customers. And if you don't think about this and adapt yourself to this future, you're going to be in a world of hurt. And that's why I call the book Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters. Because your gut is going to be telling you that everything will be fine, everything will be normal, you need to do what's comfortable for you. Well, guess what? What's comfortable for you is exactly what will get you in a lot of trouble. What's comfortable for you is to do right now what you did yesterday, but the world is not like it was yesterday. You want to do what will be the world to fit the world of tomorrow. And that by definition will always be uncomfortable and counterintuitive. It will go against your intuitions. And you need to learn the framework of going against your intuitions and doing what's not comfortable for you, which is what my work is all about.
Sometimes being comfortable is our own worst enemy. Think about how many times you've been late to meetings because you didn't want to get out of bed in time. You know, the early bird catches the worm. And if you're not up early, you're not going to make it. One of my professors said that we want to feel comfortable and we want to feel knowledgeable, which means that we feel comfortable and we don't like change. And then we don't like to admit things we don't know. And I can see some similarities on how that study came across and the cognitive biases. Where yes. We live in our comfort zone. If we don't know something, we're going to assume that we knew it and that it hasn't changed.
Yes, or that it doesn't matter. So this is a cognitive bias. There are two distinct cognitive biases here. One is called the confirmation bias. We tend to look for information that confirms our beliefs and ignore information that doesn't. That means that we will tend to look for information that confirms our beliefs that the future will be like we want it to be, like it was in the past, and we'll ignore information that doesn't. So we'll ignore those agents who are tearing apart the insurance industry because they're using new fancy technology and virtual sales techniques. We'll say, well, you know, they will not survive very well once everything goes back to quote unquote normal. And that's completely unrealistic. And that's how you get insurance agents who leave the industry because they're not able to survive because they have not adapted successfully to the future. So the confirmation bias is a big, big challenge. Now, the second issue here is a cognitive bias called the illusion of explanatory depth. So the illusion of explanatory depth, that means that you perceive yourself to know something, but you don't actually know it. So when you think, let's say that you know virtual selling, since we're talking about this, and you say, well, I know how to sell virtually, I'll just do a Zoom meeting and everything will be fine. That is not the way things work. There are hundreds of little techniques that you need to know when you're doing effective virtual selling. For example, when you're doing a Zoom meeting, where are you looking? The vast majority of insurance agents, when they're doing a Zoom sales meeting, they're looking at the screen to look at their client and see the client's impressions. But guess what? If you're looking at the screen, that means you're not looking at the camera. In effect, that means you're not making eye contact with a client. And of course, you know how important eye contact is. You would never do that if you were face to face. You would not be looking at the client's mouth. You would be looking at the client's eyes. But that is not the way things work. Intuitively, we want to look at the screen, at the client's face, because it feels like we're meeting their eyes, but we're not. The only way that the client will feel like we're meeting their eyes is if we look at the camera. So what I strongly encourage insurance agents to do is, when they're speaking, at least look at the camera. So when they're speaking, look at the camera, ignore the face of the client. You have to make that sacrifice in order to have the client feel like you're looking at them directly. And then when the client is speaking, you can look at the camera, because they're not, that's okay. So, but that is only one out of many little hundreds of components, of behavioral components of how we behave, that you need to address. And of course, John mentioned appropriately various technology, various background, but you also need to do various things like having good video digital imaging. So for example, when you're having a Zoom call with a client, can you immediately bring up PowerPoint or Prezi presentation that will show your client something? So this is something that you would not be able to do in a person-to-person meeting. You wouldn't really bring up a graphic and show it to your client. But if you are in a Zoom call, you can immediately bring up a graphic, PowerPoint, various documents, images, and that your client will see and be impressed by, that you can immediately bring them up and then take them down. That is a skill that takes effort to develop, and you need to develop those graphic resources, that content. So it's kind of like John was saying, content creation, right? It's not only about the background and the lights, it's also about the actual content that you create and that you can use to intersperse in the meeting to impress your client and to provide the statistics and the research and the stories. You know, maybe have a little video that you can play with some testimonials or something like that, that would make an effective impression on your client. These are all things that are a very complex set of behaviors and resources and techniques and technologies that you need to integrate in order to really sell effectively virtually, to be prepared for the future of the insurance industry.
One of the agents that I work with was so adept at this that he had the presentation behind him was actually the insurance presentation. So he would scroll through with the background and he would point over his shoulder exactly on where, what needed to be what. He had moving graphics and everything. Discovering the wow factor of a sales presentation can be daunting, because we are used to being the subject matter experts. We're used to of the younger generation coming to us with the questions. And now here we are, where we've had a reversal, where we're having to work together, because we have experience that the young generation needs, and they have a knowledge that we need in order to succeed.
This is the functional fixedness that we're talking about. Older insurance agents are fixed in their ways, and it's hard for them to even accept the value of what you and I are talking about right now, John, that it's really important to change and adapt for the future. I think the insurance agents that you described, that's a great technique. And of course, you can also do that by sharing his screen and sharing various elements on the screen. There are various ways to do this. There's no one right way. But the crucial thing is to combine good graphics, good technology, knowledge of how to integrate this. And then you can do A/B tests and various comparisons and see what works best with various clients and learn over time. But you need to be motivated to do this. You can't just sit on your hands and say everything will go back to January 2020, as so many insurance agents still are.
One of my mentors said, always assume that you are part of the problem, because 90% of the time you'll be right. Part of the problem is that we think we know what we're doing. We think we know how to adapt these new technologies. We think that we know how these decisions are always made. And nowadays, the thought process and what we're doing has to change. Mm-hmm. And that leads into my next question. You're saying that we need to be wary of our instincts, that our instincts aren't wired to the modern world. But some of the most notable CEOs in history, they were famed for having great instincts. We had, you know, Henry Ford, Jack Welch, Jeff Bezos. He is a wealth of information. But I'll tell you what, he doesn't go by his gut either. As much as he says he has an intuition, he calls it an educated intuition. Mm-hmm. He takes in the data. And then if the data supports what he's thinking, then yes, that's the business way we're moving. But he always has a check and balance or something there to go against or to support what his gut reaction is. Were those people such successes when most of them were instinct driven?
Well, they were successes until they weren't. So think about Henry Ford. You remember the quote, you can have the car of any color as long as it's black, right? So he was really successful at a time when any color will do, just to create the manufacturing line. All that he was really successful at. He was not at all successful in appealing to consumer tastes. And that's why Ford was overtaken by other cars, which were given colors and other aspects that would be customized to consumer tastes later onward. So as the context changed, Ford did not change, and Ford was in a big trouble. Now, look at General Electric right now. It's in a world of hurt. You know, Jack Welch left the company and he chose a bad successor. Let's all be honest. He acknowledged it himself that he chose a bad successor for the new context. So he did not choose. He chose a successor who would be a good fit if the context did not change. But the context changed and the successor was not a good successor. Jeff Bezos is quite smart and he is checking the data against his intuition because he knows that the context changes. And if the context changed, you need to change. And that's not what our gut reaction tells us. For any CEO, the gut reaction would tell them that to do what worked well before. In order to go and do something different, they have to do something that did not work well before. And right now you have the top CEOs who are making terrible decisions. I mean, we're talking about returning to the workplace, right? So the transition to the future of work. Look at what's happening with Amazon. Amazon was for many, many months throughout the pandemic insisting that they'll have an office-centric culture. So they'll have an office-centric culture, meaning having everyone back in the office. Now, increasingly, it became obvious that Amazon staff can do the back, you know, the engineers, technical professionals, not the warehouse workers, but the ones who can work from home, but they can do their work fine from home. And so they wanted to work from home, and Amazon was not letting them work from home. And so what you saw was companies, smaller tech companies that were recruiting, specific recruitment campaigns to headhunt Amazon tech staff to get them for their companies when they were offering more flexibility. So Amazon eventually on June 10th said that, well, we're not going to make you go back to the office 5 days a week. We'll make you go back to the office 3 days a week. And that was better, but that was still not good because they weren't offering flexibility. And that was, again, on June 10th. Now on October 10th, so they announced that, well, we screwed up. We're now going to have a team-led model where the team leaders will decide what works best for their team and they can have as much flexibility as they want. And that's a much better approach. So you could see that the Jeff Bezos really screwed up with the return to the office and the Amazon lost billions of dollars in highly talented staff leaving. You know how much it takes money to replace a highly talented tech staff and various other creative staff? And of course, change all of their office plans because they were first planning 5 days a week back in the office, then 3 days a week, then, you know, based on team-led models. They had to change a lot throughout this period and shift their plans because they screwed up with their original planning. Facebook was much better, for example, and Twitter and Square, which said, we'll let people work wherever they want. That was much better and much more appropriate. So we see that top leaders like Jeff Bezos are still making pretty screwy decisions, problematic decisions, which we can see from the fact that they have to go back on those decisions when they cost them many billions of dollars. So when the context changes, the people who are previously right, so I gave the example at the beginning of the interview, when the people who were praised in 1999 were booed in 2001 because the companies went bankrupt. That's because, so when the context changes, many CEOs don't realize that they have to change. And insurance agents can't afford to make the same mistakes. They need to change when the context changes. They can't fall for functional fixedness. They can't fall for the anchoring bias. They can't fall for the status quo bias. Otherwise, and all the other cognitive biases that I describe in my book, because they are their own business. They are the small business. They're not running a trillion-dollar company. So you have to make those decisions for yourself, and you have to change with the context and make good decisions, avoid these cognitive biases, Otherwise, you're going to be in a world of hurt.
When it comes to business management, I'm kind of a traditionalist. When it comes down to traditional business strategic planning assessments and SWOT analysis, I live by SWOT analysis. I will do a SWOT analysis for everything I do. And you're saying that they are false comforts. And that really got my attention. I'm like, okay, I might be doing something wrong. Why is a SWOT analysis no longer effective?
So SWOT analysis was never very effective. And here's why. We fall into cognitive bias called the overconfidence bias. That's extensive research showing that when we feel ourselves, so when insurance agents, a study of insurance agents, when an insurance agent is asked, are you compared to the rest of the insurance agents, are you an above average insurance agent or a below average insurance agent? When I ask that question in my talks, about 95% of the people rate themselves as above average insurance agents. And I'm sure you can imagine that that's what's going to happen. That's very easy to imagine. Now think about what happens with that when you do a SWOT analysis. You're going to be overconfident on your assessments of your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And most agents tend to fall into the optimism bias. And that's, by the way, a problem for me as well. So optimism bias, it's people who see the world is full of opportunity, full of rewards, who see the grass as green on the other side of the hill. And people who are optimistic like I am, and like the vast majority of insurance, otherwise they wouldn't be in sales, they tend to overestimate their strengths and opportunities and underestimate their weaknesses and their threats. And so that's what I overwhelmingly find from SWOT analysis when I do consulting engagements. So I look at the SWOT analysis of a client that they did previously, and I go into this and I look at the overconfidence, I check it for overconfidence and see that they really underestimate a number of things. And I look for the optimism and I see that they tend to be too optimistic on a number of things. So a typical SWOT analysis, if it's not corrected for cognitive biases, is really going to be a false comfort, because it will not address the fact that people tend to be way overconfident about their skills and abilities, and specifically for insurance agents, too optimistic about their strengths and their opportunities and not pessimistic enough about their weaknesses and their threats.
As insurance agents, is there a way that we could recognize and adjust our behavior for these biases? I mean, how do we recognize it? And then once we recognize it, what do we do about it?
So recognizing it, there are a number of things that you want to do to recognize it. So with optimism, for example, I talked about that, right? You'll want to be able to predict the future. So let's say you think that you will close 50 clients within the next month. I don't know. Let's say that. That's your prediction. See how often you're going to be right. What I see with insurance agents is that they tend to really overestimate the number of clients they will close. And especially as the sales quarter comes to an end, they tend to be more optimistic than they should be. And they think, well, we'll close more. We'll close those remaining clients that are in my queue. And yeah, I'll have a higher conversion ratio than I actually do. So you want to control for that positivity. If you learn that you tend to be 30% too optimistic or 50% too optimistic, then you can control for that. And you could say, well, my intuitive prediction is to be 30% too optimistic. And that's one way of addressing that. So having that be, so looking at yourself and looking at controlling for it by calibrating your optimism, that is a really effective technique. Now, another effective technique is for the overconfidence. So thinking about how often you get your decisions right, and then how often you get them wrong. And then thinking about, well, maybe I should have gathered more information before making my decision. That's what overconfidence is. It means that we're too confident about the decisions that we make and we don't gather sufficient information in order to make the decision. So look at the kind of information that you're gathering. Look at how much information you actually need to gather to make the right decision. You'll tend to find that it's quite a bit more than you intuitively feel is the kind of information you need to gather. So looking at the information gathering before you make your decision will help you address your overconfidence. Now, another way to address the overconfidence is, I mentioned the illusion of explanatory depth, which is definitely and correlates with the overconfidence bias. So a way to address that is to actually force yourself to explain the situation. So if you're confident about your sales techniques remotely, right? We've been talking about that. List out the sales techniques. What are you doing that's different remotely? Compare that to the people who are the best at selling remotely and see whether you're actually as good at selling remotely as you think you are. So those are some techniques that you can use to address that. But of course, there are many more techniques, and I go into much more depth in my book, Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters. That's what the book is about, techniques to address these cognitive biases.
How would our listeners be able to order a copy of that book?
If they want a digital copy or a physical copy or an audiobook copy, audiobooks are available on Audible, digital or physical are available on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, your local independent bookstore if you enjoy that, whatever place you want that. So check that out and check out my own resources at disasteravoidanceexperts.com. There's going to be blogs, videos, podcasts, books, online courses, coaching, consulting, decision aids of all sorts. And check out especially a free course on making the wisest decisions, perfect for insurance agents. It's going to be at disasteravoidanceexperts.com/subscribe. Again, the Wise Decision Maker course on making the best decisions to avoid these cognitive biases. Talk about all the techniques to address these problems at disasteravoidanceexperts.com/subscribe.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gleb Sapirsky. As we're closing up here, when we go through your courses and we are reading your books and we are applying it to our insurance knowledge, what are some of the questions that we should be asking ourselves in order to help ourselves become more adaptable and more aware of the biases that we have?
Your most important questions are going to be about your feelings, your intuitions. Your intuitions are really not well designed for the modern world in many ways. So you want to really become aware of your emotions, your intuitions. Now, this is a soft, squishy topic, but it's incredibly fundamentally important because it's your emotions that are pushing you away from making good decisions. It's your emotions that are going to try to cause you to stay fixed, to try to cause you to go back to January 2020. It's your feelings. It's not your rational thoughts. Rationally, of course, you realize that the situation is fundamentally different. We'll never go back to January 2020, but it's your emotions that will cause you to backslide and go back from the rational realization to that past perspective. So you want to really be aware of your emotions. Where are your emotions driving you? How can you make sure that you're not letting your intuitions drive you in the wrong direction? So really be focused and cognizant of how you're feeling. You're feeling discomfort. That means you're doing something counterintuitive. It doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong. So people very much make that fundamental mistake. They feel that when they're doing something that's comfortable, that they're doing the right thing. That they feel when they're doing something uncomfortable, that means that they're doing the wrong thing. That is unfortunately baloney. That is not how you should be thinking. When you're doing something uncomfortable, that means you're going against your intuitions. And if it's the right time to go against your intuitions, which it is in very many cases when the context changes, as it is right now with the pandemic, then you're probably doing the right thing. So you need to learn to have comfort with discomfort and learn to adjust your emotions if you want to survive and thrive in the future of work, in the post-COVID world.
Learn to get comfortable with discomfort. I like that saying. So one more time, can you tell our agents how they can get a hold of you and get the resources on your website and order your book?
Of course. So the audio copy of the book is on Audible. The digital copy and the physical copy is going to be on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, anywhere like that. My own resources are going to be at disasteravoidanceexperts.com, blogs, videos, podcasts, consulting, coaching, books. And the course I mentioned on making the wisest decisions is going to be at a free course, is going to be at disasteravoidanceexperts.com/subscribe.
Thank you very much. And agents, we'll look forward to seeing you on our next episode. That's it for this edition of the Insurance Huddle. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, be sure to check out our Facebook page and Medium blog, linked in the description box down below, for more great resources. This podcast has been brought to you by CoverWallet for Agents, the easiest way for insurance agents to quote, bind, and service their small business clients. All online and in minutes. Check us out at CoverWalletForAgents.com.